Monday the 30th of June, Kofa Zion Sivan, Rabbi Yehoshua Posen, take an interest in your mortgage.
Good morning. Those of you expecting to have a summary of all of her service this morning will be very disappointed. What I'd like to do this morning is the Ma'ora is highlight an area which I think is not given enough publicity, and unfortunately people are over potentially Suri Doraisus on a monthly basis, and therefore I think it's very worth bringing to public attention. We see in the Safa and Safa by Munna, a person has to give a Din Chezhen after 120 on how he conducted his business affairs. I think probably the number one potential Issa that a businessman can be over without realizing is probably Issa Ribbis. I'd just like to highlight a number of areas today, and with a lot of these problems there are solutions, but if people don't realize they have a problem, they don't go and ask a Shaila and they don't get to have the solution. The common solution which people are aware of is Heta Iska, and Heta Iska itself also has its limitations when and where it can be used, and depending on how much time we have initially, otherwise we'll have to continue in a different shift, whether we can come up with some different solutions, some different possibilities. I'd just like to start off with, let's say, a classic case of somebody wants to buy something on a credit card. Let's say a mother wants to buy something on a credit card. The Shaila, I had it yesterday, and the Shaila's come up the whole time. Mother wants to buy something on a credit card. Her son says, buy on my credit card, and then I can get the points or air miles, whatever it might be that he stands to benefit. So the mother does that, and the mother can't pay it off straight away, so it ends up being interest charged, and the mother pays the interest directly to the credit card, so there shouldn't be any problem. The son has just allowed her to use his credit card. Now the way Halacha looks at this, and which I'm going to go through it inside, is very different from the common perspective. The way Halacha looks at this is, this credit card is a credit card of the son. The mother has no liability whatsoever on this credit card, and in fact if the bank would go to the mother would say, it's got nothing to do with me. So the credit cards have lent the money to the son. The son has then lent the money to his mother. Now even though it happens in one direct transaction, but that is in effect al pi halacha what has happened, what's transpired. And therefore, if the mother now, when she repays the loan which her son has lent her, if the mother repaying the loan, she also pays interest which the son owes to the bank, because since it's money that was drawn on the son's credit card, the son is the one who actually owes the bank interest. So it's the same thing as me borrowing money from a yid, paying back that money, and at the same time paying the electricity bill, which would clearly be ribbis, probably ribbis deraisa. And therefore this is definitely an area which people have to be made aware of. What gets more complicated is an area which is not a situation which is spoken about so publicly, but since they're happening, one has to point out this fact. Sometimes one has a situation where a parent, or parents of whichever spouse is irrelevant, buys a property for his children. But really it's the children buying the property, and for whatever reason it is, they don't want the property in their name. And therefore, the child is, for all intents and purposes, buying a property. The father or the father-in-law is the one who actually purchases the property in his name, and the father-in-law is the one who has the mortgage in his name. But really, they have a private shtar, private either legal shtar, which you can also have a title deed between them, or they have a halachic shtar, a shtar which works up the halacha, that says that this property really belongs to the son. And now, every month, the son makes monthly mortgage payments. So it comes out that these monthly mortgage payments are really possibly ribbis deraisa. And the reason is, because since the house, even though the house is in the name of the father, and therefore if the bank have a problem, they can go to the house, but if there is a personal liability on the father, then we say that the bank have lent the money to the father. And the father has then lent this money, he's then lent this money to his child. Right? Because that's how the house belongs to the child. Now sometimes when I point this out to people, they say, no, the father hasn't lent any money to the child. So then that begs the question, so why is the child paying the mortgage payments? And on the contrary, that means if the child would sell the house, which halakhically belongs to him, then he shouldn't have to pay back the keren, the actual capital which was borrowed from the bank. Elamai, it's clear that if the property really belongs to the child, then you have a serious problem of ribbis. So I'd like to go through the halakhic side And then, assuming that won't take too long, then we'll come up with some different solutions and maybe some other areas where we find this problem. I'll give you another example where this problem is in a commercial deal, is where, let's say, I'm buying five houses that come together in one sale, and I really only want four of them. So I go to a friend of mine and I say to him, are you interested in buying one of these houses? He said, yes. But for whatever business reasons, it makes more sense that my company, purchases all five properties, I mortgage them together in the bank, and then I have a private contract between me and my friend that really the fifth house on the end of the block belongs to him. And that will be exactly the same shiner. Then in the end of the day, what I've done is I've taken out a mortgage, I've borrowed money from the bank, whether it's me or my company, it won't make a difference. I've borrowed money from the bank and I've given it to him, and he personally really owns this property. And if he personally owns this property and then he is making the mortgage payments, whether it's himself or through the rent that he's accumulating from renting out that property, doesn't make a difference because that rent belongs to him since it's his house, and it comes out that really he's paying with us. Pardon? Of the second person, I definitely didn't specify whether the second person, the first person's limited company, doesn't make a difference. If the second person is a limited company, that means the loiver is a limited company, there's a shulam in Moshe Feinstein who says it does make a difference. We do not pass on that shulam in Moshe Feinstein, not the Hachila, not the Dievez, I think across the board here in England. I've been made inquiries, I don't think anybody uses that Moshe, Al-Pi Halacha. That is a shulam in Moshe. That's pardon? That is why I the case I spoke about, I said that he passed me, I didn't mention he has a company. He asked the question, if will having a limited company make a difference? If the person lending the money, that means the person whose name the property is in, it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. But if the person purchasing the property has a limited company, there is a Shibud Ramesha that says, since he doesn't have a Shibud Aguf, that's not called a Halvor. We don't pass from that Shibud Ramesha, but there is a Shibud Ramesha. I think there are some places in America who use it with the Eved, not the Chachila. Here in England, as far as I'm aware, nobody uses it even with the Eved. No, the Talmud Chloe does not use it even with the Eved. Asim Klaus, she said, the Shuvah Moshe does not use Yom Adil. There might be other things he uses, but this he doesn't use. That's what he told me. And so let's have a look at the Halacha. The Halacha is in, now, the reason why this case of the property gets a little bit more complicated is because the property is a mashkin. This property is a mashkin. And this mashkin, we are saying, halachically, is really owned by the son. So the son is giving a mashkin to his father or father-in-law to take to the goy to borrow money for the son. Now even though the liability, personal liability, is on the father or the father-in-law, but the actual mashkin is owned by the son. And that's where it gets a little bit more complicated. So you have a look here in the tour. Yes, that's what we're going to see now. So if you have a look in the tour, the tour starts off on the bottom line on the top and then goes on to underneath. It's in Simon. The source is Zion says as follows: Yisrael, Shama lechaveri, lovely mois ma'adoy. So I'm going to put in the names just so we get clear who we're talking about here. So if a son says lechaveri to a parent, lovely mois ma'adoy, borrow for me money from the goy. Im nosan le'mashkin, if the son gives the parent a mashkin, which in this case we're saying is the house. And he tells the parent to borrow against this mashkin, muta, then it's allowed. Why? Because the goy relies on the mashkin, on the property. In such a case, it's muta even for the parent to take the interest payments directly from the son and hand it over to the bank. In such a case, he's considered, the parent is considered purely a shliach of the child. And everything he's doing is purely acting as a postman on behalf of his child. However, if there's no mashkin given, which we said would be a case of a credit card, where there's no mashkin given by the person who's using somebody else's credit card, also, then it's also, why? Because the goy's liability is only, so the goy's liability, the goy's liability is only against the owner of the credit card. And he then in turn goes back and lends that money to the person who he's allowing to use his credit card. However, if the child will tell the parents, please go to the bank and get a loan that will be in my name, mutar she'os ha'goy yisteymech al ha'mashaleach, because then the goy relies on the son, and the son is liable, and then Rashi ain't ele shliach ba'alma. In such a case, then the parent is literally just a messenger. I will mention now, because it's very important to be aware, there is a separate whole area which itself warrants a shir on oriv, and this is something which happens the whole time. A first time buyer of a property can't buy a property by himself, he needs someone to guarantee it. Now, how that is guaranteed, and even the word guarantor legally, depending on which mortgage company you're using, which bank, wherever it might be, has different ramifications. There are cases where if you look at the small print, it will tell you that the bank has a right to go to the parents even before they've gone to the child. And in such a case, there is a ribbis problem. How, it's not the same ribbis problem that we're dealing with here today, but you should be aware there is such a ribbis problem, and the ways to be masakan it are, that there are different methods to be masakan. You should be aware in such a case where a parent is asked to guarantee property, a mortgage of a child, there's a definite ribbis shaila, and you need to make sure that it's done al pi das too. However, going back to here, we're talking about a case where it's not a question of guaranteeing. It's a question either the parent is not telling the bank who he's borrowing the money for, in which case we're saying it's a problem, but the Torah said it's not a problem if there's a mashke. So if you look at the Beis Yosef on the right hand side, I'll put an arrow. If you jump to three lines up of this, of the top one where it says the Kosav Oid, next to there's a small Kof Chuf next to it. The Kosav Oid Bal Muki Yosef B'Shem Haran. So we had quoted in the Torah the Rosh, but now the Beis Yosef brings the Yosef in the name of the Ran. Duhu Adin. Similar way of writing the halacha, but you'll see the difference, and it makes a big enough in a minute. Sorry, over here. So who are din? The arrow on the right hand side, it's a three lines below the line. Beginning of the line is midin, three lines up. Because of Oyban Nukesa, B'Shem Haran, so who are din? In Nosan Mashkun, Lechaveri, Sheyuva Le'olav Mois, Migoy, Uribis, if the parent, the child has given the parent, let's say the property as a mashkin, he should go and borrow against this property from the goy. Im achrayes hagoy ala mashkin, if the liability of the bank is restricted to the property, v'loy ala shliach klal, and there's zero personal liability against the parents, then shori, then it's mutter. V'im mekabla le hashliach, and now moving underneath, where there's an arrow on the bottom half of the page. V'im mekabla lo, im mekabla le hashliach achrayes, but if the parent accepts liability, also then it is a problem. The chivun the goy leitova el shliach, because since the goy, the bank in our case, will claim from the parent, uminei shokil ribis, and he'll take from him the interest. The shliach shokil mishliach, and the parent will go back and get this interest off the child, also which is the interest payments which the child is making monthly in our case. Also, kizin orif heichad to goy other bosa arva in a case where a goy will go after an orif. Umasham edvor adkan. That's the end of the mukiyosef from Iran. Points out that Beis Yosef there's a clear distinction between what the mukiyosef is writing and what the Torah is writing. Umasham edvor shimachrayes hagoy ala mashkin ve'ala shliach. In a case where there's liability on the property and against the parent, the parent is also firstly liable. Then it's also v'nirali explains to Beis Yosef. The Tamei Mishum Dachayus El Ashliachu Medin Leiva. When Amashku Medin Oriv, again getting involved in the Lomdus of Leiva and Oriv, which we can't go into now, but saying that basically the way the bank looks at it is, it's primarily lent the money to the parent, but the property is a security against the loan which is lent to the parent. Again, all of this is only in a case where the parent has personal liability. If liability can be restricted to this property, then there won't be any problem. In such a case, the only way the parent can do this is if the parent were to tell the bank, which obviously you're not going to have an option to do in the situation we're talking about, that I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to accept any personal liability, in which case it might tell you to find another bank, especially nowadays. So that is what we've seen in the Torah of Yisrael, that we have a clear machlekes between the Torah, whether it's machlekes or not, the Torah writes that if there's a mashkin, which in our case is what we're discussing, the property there is, then there's no problem. So the Beis Yosef, that will only be if there's no personal liability on the parent. Now if you turn over, you have a look in the Shulchan Aruch. And I didn't copy that where the Mechaber carries on to Sifu Zion on the bottom. There's a couple of words that I'll read out from here. I'll just have to hear. The Mechaber says as follows. So this is the Mechaber is the same as the Beis Yosef. The Mechaber writes the way the halacha, the way he explains it in the Beis Yosef. Yisrael Shalom Alachaveri Lovely Mois Me'Ovi Kechovim, which in our case means the son who asked the parent to borrow money for him from the goy for ribbit, and there's going to be an interest charge. If the child is giving his property to his father to borrow against the property, now here the Mechaber writes, if the liability is restricted to the property, and there's no personal liability against the parent, now here I'm afraid I didn't copy for you, the Mechaber carries on. So if the liability is restricted to the property and not on the parent, then it's mutter for the parent to take the ribbis, to litno loyu zechom, even he can make the payments direct, and it will still be mutter. V'im lo'nos and lo'imashkin osu, elim kin, omo lo'i lo'v li mois, ribbis, ma'oyu zechom, ma'ashmi, ve'aminu ho'oyu zechom, v'usim echal ha'loyu v'lo'al ha'shliach. So it will only be mutter if the parent were to say, I'm borrowing money for my son, and the son was to be liable and not the parent. So practically speaking, what we've seen in the Mechaber is what I began with. In a case where a parent were to be acting on behalf of his child, really the child is the owner of the property. And again, it's worth mentioning that is only, this whole shaila is only where the child is in fact the actual owner of the property. Sometimes you have a situation where a parent is buying something for the child, but nothing has actually happened that makes it the child's. Parents got it still in the parent's name. He is the one with the mortgage. And what actually made it the child's? Was there a contract? Is there any kinyan that makes it the child's? If it doesn't, tach it doesn't belong to the child, then you haven't got any of these shailas. You might have a chamei v'esrim, a yerusha shaila, where is this property going to get split up between all the yoshim or go to this child in particular? And that will depend on however many other factors that happen, a chamei v'esrim and tzavo and everything else. But if we're talking about specifically here where the child has either a legal contract or a halachic shtar, which a legal contract works also as a halachic shtar, that the property belongs to the child, in such a case what we've seen in the Mechaber is even when there's a property which is acting as a security against the loan, but since the bank do not have no knowledge of the child's ownership of this property, and more than that, they're not making the child liable in any way, so therefore the bank have lent the money to the father, the parents have passed on that loan to the child, and therefore when the child makes monthly interest payments, he'll be over if it's a raisa every single month. That's as it stands in the Mechaber. Comes along the Shach. The Shasti Gimel here made a circle around it. Sorry, I put a circle around the wrong one. It's Sifnun and Aleph. It says the Shach Sifnun Aleph. Underneath the circle, Sifnun Aleph says the Shach. V'atzur lo hizki shehachrayas over the chovim ala mashkin levad. The Torah doesn't write that when is it mutter by a mashkin only when there's zero liability against the child. The Torah just writes, the Torah writes, when is it mutter? When the goy relies on the mashkin. Now look at this. When Ali says, the Shach seems to me, that when is the Torah talking about? The Torah is talking about a case where the mashkin, which in our case is a property, is something really sound. It's a sound, secure mashkin, where the bank knows they can get their money from this mashkin. The odd mistamo who say mechala mashkin levad, because then, now here we're talking, let's be very clear, the Shach is not talking about where the parent has accepted specifically personal liability. The Shach is talking about a case where I go to a goy with this mashkin and ask to borrow money. So the Shach, the Torah is talking about a case where the mashkin is a secure mashkin. So if it's a secure mashkin, then the da'at of the goy is, I'm going to get it back from this mashkin. V'la'al ha-shliach, he doesn't even think about the parent. He thinks about the mashkin. But the haran v'mechava, but the Rana Mechaber talking about when a mashkin is not such a secure mashkin. The Shach comes on to make shalom between the Torah and the Mechiyos, and he says they're talking about two different cases. The Torah is talking about a case where the mashkin is a sound mashkin, which in our case of a property, most times one would assume the property is at least a sound mashkin against at least the keren, maybe not against the interest, but at least against the keren, it's a sound mashkin. Nowadays, probably you can't get any more 100% mortgages, so probably for 90-80% mortgage, whatever it's going to be, at least one can hope that the property is going to be sound mashkin against that loan, in which case there's a shach, the Torah says there's no problem, even if it might actually be that the bank could come to the parent, but their das is primarily on the property. However, what is the mechaber and mukiyosa talking about? That's the case where the mashkin is a shach a mashkin. So no, you give something which has a value, but it's not ideal in the eyes of the person lending the money, in the eyes of the goy, and therefore they think about the personal liability. That's how they're going to get their money. That's the way the shach writes. In the shach memtes, at the end of the shach, I was actually underlined because I copied this from my shulchan aruch. In the shach memtes, it brings up literally. I mean, you can't really do this jump into the last line of a shach. But the shach says mekomokim yesh li zoy bedover. The shach there is pointing out the same point that mashkin toiv is okay, and there he himself says, but yesh li zoy bedover. You have to be careful whether you have to rely on this kula. Just to be clear, it will come out from the shach in a case where you have a mashkin toiv, which we're saying a property probably is. Then there's no problem of rivets. However, the Zaki Tshuva on this halacha, the Zaki Tshuva says. He brings the Yeshchokim al Hashach and he says, "Uchein kosa shachrinim." That they don't agree with the Shach. They hold that Tachad Halacha is even by a Mashkin Toiv, if there's personal liability, if the parent is personally liable, then there's a problem. And the Chavos Das limits the application of the Shach. In any case, it won't be relevant to us. Why? Says the Chavos Das, the Shach is not talking about a case where the parent, the Shliach, as it's called in the Torah, accepts clearly and specifically and signs a contract saying that they are personally liable. The Shach is talking about when I walk up to a goy and I say, "Can I borrow money?" And I don't tell the goy I'm borrowing money for somebody else. And I've got a mashkin, so when I give him the mashkin, if the mashkin is a good mashkin, then he thinks, "Oh, I'm going to get my money back from the mashkin. Very good, no problem." But where the mashkin's not a good mashkin, then he thinks that you're going to be personally liable. Says the Chavos Das, that's true. But if you accept clearly and specifically personal liability, which we're talking about, where you do and you take that loan from the bank, you're accepting personal liability. And in such a case, even the shach has to agree. In the end of the day, the parent is a lover, the child is then borrowing from the parent, and there's an isurus. The Sheva Alevi brings down, Sheva Alevi in Chelik Zayin, Simon Kufman Aleph, brings down a shayla that was written from a rov in America. And the rov in America wanted to say that since legally in America, the banks first have to go for the property, and only then can they go to the person who's personally liable. So therefore, it should be that basically it's the other way around from the Lomdus, which we briefly saw in the Beis Yosef. Really, it comes out that the Mashkin is the lover, and the personal liability is like an oriv. You're like guaranteeing your property. That's the way he writes the Shach, and therefore it should be Muslim. Now, rather here in England, as far as I'm aware, it doesn't work like that. If you have a property and you sign personal liability, you are the person who's borrowed the money. First they have to send letters to you, first they have to request you to pay the money. Then, if they're not Matzliach, then they will move on to try and get hold of the property. And it's not just because it's harder to get hold of the property than to get the cash off you, but because that is the procedure, that really first you're the lover and the property is tougher security, so in which case the shayla here wouldn't begin. But even if it would begin, the Sheva Levi argues with the person asking the shayla, and he says, to have a case where you're telling the bank you're borrowing the money, and really it's somebody else borrowing the money, which is what we're talking about now, and on top of that, you are personally accepting liability, in such a case, the Shach never spoke about, like we saw in the Chavos Das, and in such a case, it's clear that there's a problem of ribbis. So we've established that there's a problem of ribbis in this case. The shaila is, so how do we get around this problem? Now, normally, when it comes to ribbis shailas, people know there's a case to Hefe Iska, and when like Hefe Iska, what's the problem? Everything's solved. Now, I'm not going to have time today to come up with the solution that Taka works, but let me just explain to you why Hefe Iska doesn't work. Sometimes. My Hefe Iska doesn't work. First of all, what is Hefe Iska? I'm not really going to do justice in the 5 minutes left, but Mr. Shem, if we have another show, we'll go through this clearer and then we'll go on to the new method which does work. Hefe Iska basically means, let's take the case of the parent and the child. If we were to write a Hefe Iska, what would we actually be doing? So let's say the property is the £500,000 and the loan is the £400,000. So Hefe Iska would be saying, the £400,000 which I am lending to you, which the father is lending to the son, he doesn't want to be lending to the son, because that's how we come up with all the problems of rivets. Instead, the father says, I'm investing with you £400,000. Right? Now the Gemara says, if you invest with somebody an amount of money, then iska, before we come to the Heter Iska. Iska means, Iska is when you give someone money, unless you specify otherwise, it's Targum Rova, Targum Bikodin. That means, half of the 400,000, £200,000, I'm lending to my son. That means that no matter what he does with it, I'm only going to get back 200,000 because I've lent him the money. He can do with it what he likes. And the other 200,000, I'm investing with my son. Targum Milva, Targum Bikodin. That means that therefore when he takes the £400,000 which he's meant to be investing, half of the money which he generates from the investment will belong to me, and half the money will belong to him. Right? Now, therefore, let's say he's invested £400,000 and it would make a £1,000 profit in the first month. £500 of that money belongs to me, not the thousand. Because half of the money which I've invested, I lend him. And from the half which I've lent him, I've got no rights to profits. That's his half of the business. We're now 50-50 shareholders in whatever business he's going to inject this money into. That's what Iska means. Now, Iska means that is, that since we're Shutzrim, what happens if he turns around at the end of the month and he says, by the way, this month, unfortunately, our Iska, our business, didn't make any profit. As a Shutzrim, I am entitled to say, I don't believe you. How do I know it didn't make, I see everyone else, times are booming, and you tell me you didn't make a profit. I think you made a profit. I want you to make a shvur that you didn't make a profit. Now, a lot is a shutzrim is entitled to request a shvur from his partner to how much profit was actually generated. Heter Iska uses this right of a shutzrim and takes full advantage of it. The way it works is Heter Iska says, "I'm a shutzrim with you. Now, really, as a shutzrim, I'm writing now in the original beginning of the contract terms and conditions of our shutzrim. I'm writing that I have a right to make you make a shua, not just a shua, a shua chamura deraisa on a sefer Torah in shul in front of everybody, and that's fully within my rights. That's the terms and conditions of our shutzrim. However, if you pay me the projected 5%, which I think this business deal should be making, then I'm prepared to waive my rights to shua that it isn't more. So you pay me 5%, and then you can walk." So basically, this is meant to be a method of guaranteeing 5% profit, which is what you're after, or whatever percentage it is, and we'll come back to that in a minute, of guaranteeing the percentage without there being a halvah. That's the theory. That's how it should work. Now, the problem is, if I'm intending to get 5% a year on the 400,000, then really what I'm saying is that I've assumed that the property, the business deal is going to be making 10% a year. Because I'm only entitled to half of the money. Because only half the money is a pikodin, the other half is a halvot. So that is why, if you've ever heard of this, there are rabbonim will impose a restriction of a maximum how much of a percentage you're allowed to charge on a heter iska to be called reasonable. You're not just allowed to say, "I want to get 20%, because you've got no right to assume that it should be making 20%. So some rabbonim allow 13, 14, I don't think anyone allows more than 15%. On a heter iska, because basically that means what you're saying is that I'm assuming it's making more than 30% a year, right? Because only half of the profits are you getting. Now, the restriction with a heter iska, there are a number of other problems with heter iska, and which we haven't had time to go into. But the restriction to the heter iska is like this: since the whole way the heter iska works is I am a silent partner, I've invested this money, I have no idea whether you've been matzliach or not been matzliach. Therefore, I'm entitled to make you make a shvur that you haven't been matzliach, and instead of that shvur, I'm allowing you to pay me the 5%, whatever it might be that we've discussed between us. Why was in the case where I know quite clearly exactly what you invested into? Let's take our case, a property. I know that you've taken this money to put it into a property. Now, if it's a property which you're going to live in, that itself is a machlekes if you can even write a heter iska. But we pass in a property you can live in, you can't. Theoretically, you should be able to write a heter iska. If I'm buying a property somewhere and you don't know where it is, even if I'm going to live in it, you can write a heter iska because we hope that the property is going to go up in value, and that's going to be the iska. However, if I know the exact house you put it into, I might even live on the same road, and I know full well this year property prices on our street haven't gone up, maybe even they've gone down. So if I know that the iska which we've invested, we become shutrim in, has gone down in value, then I've got no right to make you make a shvur to prove to me that my investment didn't go up, because I know it didn't go up. So the chazanish, if you know that the iska has not gone up, you've got no right to assure. If you've got no right to assure, then you cannot take the payment that month. Which means, if you were to allow a heter iska to the situation which we're talking about, then you could have a very real situation, especially in today's climate, where a parent right there to Iskar for the child. He's lending the child $400,000. He's lending $200,000. He's investing. He now knows that it didn't go up in value. What's going to happen is the child is going to say, "I'm very sorry. I'm not allowed to pay you because it didn't go up in value. We're investing. You didn't lend me any money. You invested in me. This year it didn't go up in value." And the parent will end up having to make the interest payments out of their pocket. So here's a clear problem with going ahead and head to Iskar. Mr. Shem, the next time we have a shir, we'll highlight some other aspects of head to Iskar and we'll come up with a solution which does cover wash.